Continuing in mitzvah Shin Lamed Vav 336, which is the mitzvah to conduct court cases appropriately when there's an issue about transactions. So the implication being is that there is a Torah rule about how transactions should be conducted. One person sells or one person buys. That there are various methods of acquisition that one can employ in order to gain possession of a particular property, whether it be a movable object or whether it be real estate. The Odesh Kenia Acheres, going back, we started this last time, but just it's a little bit in the middle, so we'll go back to the paragraph. The Odesh Kenia Acheres, there's another type of acquisition. By the way, the Sefer Chinuch over here does not list every single possible type of acquisition. He just gives a few examples. That's what, like what Mr. Hirsch sometimes says when we say for Chinuch says, no, I just brought a few things, but go learn the rest in the Masechtas that discusses. She's like, what else is there to discuss? So there's a lot more to discuss. The Minchas kind of actually supplements it a little bit by giving other examples of kinyanim, which are actually used in Mechiras Chametz. So there's one kinyan that he mentioned, which is called Odisa, which is that when one person admits or acknowledges that they purchased an object. And we also mentioned a little bit last time of Situmta, which is a method which is originally in the Gemara, refers to when somebody purchased, let's say, containers of wine, so the seller used to stamp it with the name of the purchaser. So even though that's not a Torah acquisition, nevertheless, since it was accepted at the time that that was an absolute method of acquisition, then that's recognized by Halacha, and that extends to what we were talking about last time of shaking hands. That when you have Mazel Bracha, these types of things, that when there's something that's accepted as a method of a Kinyan, so that that generally does work. So we're talking about the Chalifin. That's the Kinyan of exchange. As we said in Megillas Rus, so even if it doesn't come into the person's actual physical possession, nevertheless, if I say, you know, I want to buy your donkey and you're going to buy my candlesticks that I have sitting in my house, so as soon as I pull your donkey, it performed the kinyan mashiach on your donkey, since I performed one kinyan, so that kinyan works to exchange for the other also. So even though no physical method of acquisition has been yet performed on the candlesticks, in our example, if somehow they get destroyed, then too bad, you know, they belong to the purchaser already, absolutely, because they were purchased by way of a kinyan of exchange. What's an example nowadays of a kinyan of exchange that we do all the time? It's not really a transfer of property, but you see it all the time at weddings. What happens at weddings? So you're at the chassan's tish. That's the way we do it. The way we do it nowadays. So the chassan's tish. The we know the before they signed the ksuba, so the groom lifts up a kli that belongs to the Mesader Kiddushin. So what does that mean? What does that have to do with anything? The answer is that the Mesader Kiddushin is here acting on behalf of the bride as her agent in order to acquire the ksuba obligations. So when the groom lifts up this, usually a pen, whatever it could be, any kli that belongs to the Mesader Kiddushin, so he acquires the kli, doesn't really keep it, gives it back, it's just a, you know, a gesture, a formalization of the kinyanim, of the obligations of the ksuba. So he lifts up the kli, and then he acquires that, and by way of the chalipin of exchange, so the bride, with the Mesader Kiddushin being her agent, acquires the chassan's obligation to fulfill the things as stated in the ksuba, which basically mean that all his property is subject to a requirement that if they get divorced or if he dies, So she is entitled to collect certain funds from the ksuba. Fine. So the ksuba is, as we say, a life insurance document, basically. That's why it's a little bit funny that some people post the ksuba on their walls. Now they have these things nowadays, these beautifully decorated, wonderful ksubas that you post on the wall, which is, people think, you know, it's their marriage certificate. It just, you know, it's a document that displays their undying love, which is really quite...
the right to live together.
Right. But really, it's just a life insurance document that details certain financial obligations on behalf of that the husband is required to give to his wife if the marriage should terminate. So while some poskim say they recommend actually keeping the ksuba on the wall because that way you for sure won't lose it, okay? It's still, fundamentally, it's a little bit of a strange thing to be displaying on the wall.
Now, what if, you know, chas v'chalila, some, you know, like lightning bolt hit the chasan, you know, after he acquired the ksuba, you know, obligation, but before, in fact, you go through the wedding?
That, no, the ksuba doesn't actually take effect.
Until the
meaning,
okay.
There's an agreement here that once they get married, they're going to do the obligation. But the ksuba, for sure. V'din kenias ha-chalifen einu ela v'kelim avalo v'peros. You cannot use fruit. Not use for the kenyan chalifen. It has to be something that is a kli. It has to be a vessel of some kind. You know, either an article of clothing or a pen works or... any type of vessel, really. She'arei b'feirush matzana b'osokosuv shelamadnu menu achalifim shebeklihein. So we learned explicitly in the pasuk in Rus, k'mo shekasuv v'zosefanim b'Yisrael shalafi ishnalo, he took off his shoe and gave it to the friend. So therefore, you see from that it has to be a type of vessel. Kilomar, how does he translate that? Beis yad shelo, a glove.
Presumably, glove makes more sense because who would want to take a shoe from somebody? It's all dirty and, you know, smelly and so on. The glove is more apt to be given. You could find a use.
But either works.
Okay.
Lamaisa and halacha, either one works. Either a shoe or a glove would work. But again, okay. So nahl could mean shoe, just like in German, handschuh means. A glove is literally a hand shoe. Okay. Even they can't be the object of the kinyan of the chalifin, but they can be something that's purchased by way of chalifin. So, for example, if I say, we'll use Harry's my customer. So, if I say, Harry, please, I want to purchase your apples that you have at home, and you're going to purchase my phone. We're going to do a kinyan chalifin. So, Harry lifts up the phone, and then I purchase the apples that he has at home because they can be purchased by way of chalifin. They just can't be the object that forms the active part of the kinyan chalifin.
It doesn't work the other way around. You can't lift up the apple.
Right, but I couldn't lift up Harry's apples, and thereby he acquires my phone. That would not work. Right. Ma she'ein kein b'matbeya. She'ha matbeya einu nasa chalifin v'lo nikne b'chalifin. So there's something that's on an even that's even farther removed from a kinyan chalifin, which are coins. So it's not on the actual intrinsic value of the object, but rather it's on the form, the, how do you say this in English? The imprint.
Oh, yeah.
On the coin, yeah. So it's worse because it cannot be used for chalipin, it cannot be purchased with chalipin. So it depends on the government. The government says this coin isn't worth anything anymore, so then it doesn't really matter. So since you have in mind this should only be used, it's sort of subject to the whims of someone else, so that doesn't work. Since it's not something that's everlasting, that we don't worry about the intrinsic value, only talk about this value that's subject to whims, so it doesn't work for chalifin. So there, that's like if I said... If I had a bag of quarters and Harry had a bag of dimes, so I said, well, I want to buy your dimes, I want to acquire your dimes, So please lift up my bag of quarters. So he lifts up my bag of quarters, so that doesn't work. And even if I said, here, here's my phone, which is a kli, so I want to buy your bag of quarters.
A vessel. Manufactured item, you know.
It doesn't have to be a pot.
That's
you know?
Not right. Yeah. Right. Just like, for example, like the definition of what can be used on the schach. You know, right?
Ah, you know, yes.
Yeah, right.
So I say, I want to buy your bag of dimes, and you lift up, you want to buy my phone, so you lift up my phone, you acquire my phone, and I'm going to acquire your bag of dimes. So that does not work. So this, it would work if there were a coin that you only go by its intrinsic value and not by its tzura. So there was a blank coin. You know, a blank coin, they have these for pinyon ben sometimes. Not blank, it has some sort of design on it.
Yeah.
But it's not made for, it doesn't have a value imprinted on it. It's just a certain weight of silver that's in the shape of a coin.
Right.
So that would work for Khalifin.
So for a pinyon ben, I mean, normally they use like silver dollars or something like that. Is that a problem? It's like a...
Is that a problem? I hope not.
Everybody does it.
No, the thing is this. For my opinion, Benso, I used a bar of silver bullion.
Oh.
Although it doesn't have to be silver at all. It could be shavik kesef. It doesn't have to be a coin. It doesn't have to be money. It could be an object. You could give a car to the coin as for pinyon abeno. That's much more than the required amount of money. Okay, usually. Unless it's a very, very cheap car. If it's a 50-year-old car that, you know, is sitting on stilts or something, then maybe it would be the right value. Okay. But the reason... So some people have coins, again, these blank coins for pidyon haben, which are just based on their certain weight in silver. So some people don't like that because nobody... They're designed to be coins, but they're not really legal tender. Okay. Mm-hmm. But the positive, if you give the weight in silver, so it's okay.
But you can sell them for the weight... Silver.
Right. So then, and silver dollars, so one reason some people don't like silver dollars is because the face value is different from the actual value of the coin.
Uh-huh, right. Uh-huh, uh-huh.
So therefore, it's unclear what you'd be using, the face value or the value of the coin, so you want something that's worth a set amount of money without any of these shtiklach tayra or cheshboinas. But then again, you're right, the minhag is that we're not concerned for this, and we do use silver dollars. There's no reason, again, you don't have to use silver dollars. It's just one thing. It's easy to get the required amount of money if you have these coins that have a certain percentage of silver in them. So you don't have to worry about shavik kesef if you have the correct weight in silver. Ve'ezehu ze matbeah shepsolatu malchus o b'nei ha-medina. So it doesn't have to be a blank coin. It could simply be a coin that the government decided is no longer legal tender, or that even if the government didn't formally decide, but it could be that people, just in terms of their conventions of businessmen, don't accept these coins anymore. They said, no, we don't accept these coins as legal tender. So such coins, even though they have an imprint on them, would be acceptable for use as Kenyan Khalifin. Right. Even if it's a bag full of coins and doesn't work. It does work, I'm sorry, in certain situations. So these types of coins, the reason that they're acceptable for Kenya Khalifin is that, one is that the government officially decreed that these coins are not acceptable, and the other is that the people in the community and in the area just decided on their own that they were not going to accept these coins anymore as legal tender. So it doesn't mean, what do you mean? Over here. So, if I want to buy Harry's apples, and he wants to buy my bag of coins, so I want to buy Harry's apples, and he wants to buy a bag of coins. So he lifts up, so I lift up his apples, and so I take, What?
Peros, you get, you know. The,
right. So we want to do an incorrect chalifim. Okay. We don't know this halacha. So I lift up his apples, and he supposedly, in our minds, he's acquiring my bag of coins. But we know that the din is that it doesn't constitute chalifim. So what does that mean? Does that mean, too bad, I got your apples. I got your apples, and you didn't buy my coins, so therefore I get your apples for free. Is that what it means? No. Obviously, I have to pay for the apples that I'm buying from you. I don't just get them for free because we did an incorrect type of chalifin. What it means is, you didn't acquire these specific coins. Mm-hmm. I wanted your apples, and you wanted, you know, I filled one of those little boxes over there with quarters in order to buy your apples. I said, here, Harry, you're going to buy that exact thing of coins. So I said, fine. So we do our chalifa, and then we learn that it's not true. So what that means is, you didn't acquire those coins, those quarters. Mm-hmm. But I owe you $10 for your apples, so I can pull out a $10 bill and give it to you. It doesn't have to be those exact coins, but I'm still required to pay you the amount of money. So if those coins that I designated to you in our chalifa that was incorrect, if now somebody bursts in one of these doors, takes the coins and runs off with them, so I can't say, well, Harry, we did chalifin, those coins were yours. Sorry, you know, I'm taking these apples now. No, because though that chalifin didn't work, so therefore I still have to pay you the money, even though now I'm out double. Okay. V'zeu sha'amru zichronim levracha. That's what our sages tell us. Moshach emenu perus velo nasan lo mos eino yachol lachzor bo. But nevertheless, once I did a kinyan on your apples, a kinyan hagbar, kinyan meshicha. So then I can't go back on my word. I have to pay you the money. It's in other words, I owe you the money. I don't owe you a specific object. And the specific object in our case happens to be coins. But again, that doesn't work in this case. But if it were coins that were that were no longer legal tender, then I would owe you those exact specific coins, and if somebody burst in and took them, then I would be getting your apples for free, basically. Okay. V'cheinu mevor b'reish perek azov, sham resham azov, kones hakesev, that gold can buy silver, and silver cannot buy gold. Ma'ala b'chalifin, lo b'domim. So this isn't talking about chalifin. So if we're talking about chalifin, then were gold coins and silver coins, this would undermine our thesis that coins work for chalifin, which is an opinion in the Gemara over there, but we don't go like that. What do you mean? If it's just talking about amount you owe each other, so it should say owe, not purchase. What it means is that the difference between kinyan and a debt is like we explained before, that it's if it were worked with chalifin, so I would owe you those specific coins. But if it's just talking about monies owed, then I could pay you with a bill, I could pay you with a check, I could pay whatever I wanted to pay. Even though it means that you have to give him the money, fine. The point is that you can't go back on your sale. Once I lifted up your apples, so it doesn't, I can't now say, oh, well, this chalifin didn't work. I was planning to make chalifin. I lift up your apples, and you were supposed to acquire my coins over there in that box. Oh, but now the rabbi is telling me that this actually does not work as a kinyan chalifin. So, too bad. I don't want to go through with this sale. I had in mind only to do chalifin. So, no, that is incorrect. So, because once I lifted up, I performed the kinyan on the peros, so that is irreversible, and now I have to pay him the money for the apples, whether I like it or not, whether it's those specific coins, whether it's different manners of legal tender, all is good. Aval nosin lachavero mos liknos bimenu peros einu mischayu bala peros lasitam lo. But if I just say, if we don't do a kinyan, you know, we colloquially call a kinyan, meaning these are physical methods of acquisition, but I just pull out a few quarters from my pocket and I say, here, Harry, here is money. I want to buy your apples. Shizohi, so then Harry does not have to give me his apples. If he wants to change his mind, then he can say, no, sorry, I decided I want to keep the apples. Shizohi takonas chachomim. Zichronim levracha shelo liknos bekesef el b'mashicha. That's the whole thing we've been discussing until now, that even though on a deraisa level, once I hand Harry the money, I've acquired the apples. But on a derabbanan level, that's insufficient. You need a physical method of acquisition. So even though on a derabbanan level, it's not an absolute acquisition, and Harry could renege on his on the deal. Nevertheless, he goes in front of the Beis Din, and the Beis Din says a very scary, formal proclamation. He who exacted vengeance from the people of the generation of the flood will also exact vengeance from those who do not abide by their word. Okay, bye now. Go ahead and keep your apples if you want. You know, didn't do the... So we have this idea that you're supposed to keep your word once you get paid money for a particular object, even though according to the technical halacha, the purchaser has not yet actually acquired the object. That's a stam kinyan in the words of the sages. It's a really strong type of acquisition. Bein b'mechar, bein b'matana, whether it's a sale or a gift, v'chol tenoyin shebein adam l'chaveiro, shenemar b'zeh, l'kayyem kol davar, v'zosa tu'udah b'Yisrael. It says that this is the, this upholds all things, and this is the record in Israel. That's the Pasuk uses very strong language to describe the Kinyan Chalipin.
What's there between a strong method of Kinyan and a weak one? I mean,
well, that it's very, it's used...
I mean, you know, they both work, right? So, you know, they can't, you know...
Right, but this is... it's strong in the sense that usually you need... Right, so you... Kenyan... Excuse me. Kenyan... Hagbah is stronger than a Kenyan Mashicha, even though they both work, because a Kenyan Hagbah works in every place. Oh. That, in other words, a Kenyan Mashicha, again, all doesn't work... in the property of the seller. That's why it's called a stronger kinyan, because it has a greater effect in a different place.
Yeah.
Right, so here the kinyan chalipin, and also it's very strong because it's an absolute kinyan, even though for one of the objects that's being acquired, there's absolutely no action being done on it whatsoever, and no matter where those objects are, they now revert to the possession of the purchaser.
By the way, a little bit off subject. Is it possible to do a kinyan on Shabbos?
Is it possible?
Yeah, I mean, for example, yeah. Whenever the shul gives somebody a book or something like that, they always put before Shabbos, you'd sort of say, okay, we're really giving it to you now, but we're going to present it to you on Shabbos, that sort of thing. Is that
You don't want to give presents really on Shabbos because it's slightly reminiscent of Mekach u Memkar. But it's almost never relevant because, A, either people have this thing, they're Makne before Shabbos, okay, that works, that's fine. Or, very simply, you say, here, enjoy this book or whatever you're giving as a present. But the person doesn't have in mind to officially acquire it till after Shabbos. You just inform them of an impending gift as opposed to actually giving the gift. So this is almost never going to be a problem. On Yontif as well, you have a Shabbos also if you have an Erev. So if you give a present, a host gift, for example, on Shabbos. So let's say you bring a bottle of wine to your host for a Shabbos meal. So don't you people? You give a present. So yeah, okay. So here's a bottle of wine. Enjoy the bottle of wine. Maybe it's not yours. Maybe we're sharing it with the people at the meal. Or if you don't serve it at the meal, so wait till after Shabbos, and then you'll acquire it. It's never an issue.
Lulav, you
know, that's a tzorich mitzvah, so that's allowed.
Okay, all right. So
that's a tzorich mitzvah.
Basically, the only issue with it, basically, is a concern the rabbanim have about Memkar.
Yeah, it's similar to Mekkacho Memkar.
There's a weak, objection, shall we say. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Right. The truth is that the Mishnah talks about giving presents on Yontif. It mentions that even if something... This is not exactly the issue of Mekkacho Memkar, but it says presents used to be given in permissible manners on Shabbos and Yontif all the time. Is my point that you don't have to be so concerned about these acquisitions on Shabbos because there are so many ways around it, and you don't have in mind to be kona till after Shabbos or Yontif, then it's okay. The Mishnah says that even that you're allowed to bring someone a present on Yontif, even if you have to carry it through Rishus Harabim. So normally we assume that if something is not necessary for that day of Yontif, so you're not allowed to carry it on Yontif. So it says that you're allowed to give someone a present on Yontif, even if you know that they're not going to use it that day, because the etzem giving of the present is considered letzorech Yontif. Hmm. So
if I bring like a piece of cheese when it's always going to be a flagic meal or something.
Something like that. If you give you bring a piece of cheese and you give it to someone on Yontif, you know for sure they're not going to eat it on Yontif. So the goodwill that it engenders
right.
is considered mm-hmm. Is considered tzorech Yontif.
Yeah.
Okay. So again, yeah, so something that's very frequently done is giving of gifts on Shabbos and Yontif. Fine. V'din mishu roi limkor v'yiskayim mechro o mishu eino roi. So who can sell an object? Can go and bendas v'sheino bendas. If somebody is insane, then they are not authorized to perform transactions. Pretty simple. We have the sections of Maseches Bava Basar which discuss, if you're selling a house, so are you including the furniture or not including the furniture? If you're selling a ship, are you including the sails or the rope in front of it that you pull the ship with into the docks? There are all these things that sometimes you have sales, you sell some, and it's not clear exactly what's included. So the Inin Halacha tells you what's included, but it says that if there's a convention, a set convention in that place, then that would work as well. V'din mishayer b'memkaru shum davar b'guf of Paris, if you leave stuff out. V'din mitzarim shetzarech adam lahazkir b'mecher karka. So you're supposed to mention that if you have a field, so you have to mention, well, there are trees on the border of the field or other things, ancillary to the field on the border, and those are included in the sale. And if you don't, you're supposed to mention it, but if you don't mention it, they're also included. What if you only mention some of them and not others? Then that could be more of an issue, because if you mention some specifically and not others, so maybe you only mention to include those border areas and not the other border areas. If you sell something that does not belong to you, so that transaction does not work. He gives the example over here in the footnotes of saying, let's say one's father is on his deathbed, and you're about to inherit a large amount of money. So somebody says, well, I want to sell you these objects that I'm inheriting from my father, so that does not work yet. Mm. Until they actually belong to you. V'din shenena aslimkor karko madino achiluk shebein tlu v'zaven o tlu v'yoev. So there's an interesting halacha, which is that if you're forced to sell something, so the sale is valid. But if you're forced to give a present, then the present is not valid. Okay. V'din hamaton ma'amasneim chaveru shim yirtze limkor karko sheyimkerehu lo. So what happens if you tell your friend, you make a tenai in advance that if he's planning to sell his property, so he should sell it to you, whether that is a binding nature or not. V'din ha-mocher karko al das laso shum inyan V'lo ala biyado lasoso miskayem michro o lo. So let's say you're planning to make aliyah, and you sell your house. So you sell everyone in the town, hey, you know, let's get a real estate agent. Can anyone recommend a real estate? You post on Facebook. Can anyone recommend a real estate agent because we're making aliyah and we want to sell our house? So for a year, you've been talking about making aliyah and selling your house because you're making aliyah. So then somebody buys your house and everything is all packed up and you go move to Eretz Yisrael. And then you're planning to move to Eretz Yisrael. And then somehow, you know, the boat plans fall through. The boat doesn't make it all the way. It has to turn back. And then you hear that the place we're planning to buy in Eretz Yisrael was sold to someone else. So sorry, I need my house back.
Also, like all the Jews who sold their property in the time of Shabbat Tzvi.
Exactly.
I'm assuming he's Mashiach, then, you know, oops, guess what? He's not Mashiach. Right? Get it back. Huh?
We're only selling it on the condition that Shabbat, yeah. Okay. Yeah, so that's the case. If it's explicit that the only reason you're selling your property is because you're making aliyah, then that goes back if you, in fact, do not succeed in making aliyah. I assume there must be a time limit, right? Because if, 5 years later, you realize that's not working out for you in Eretz Yisrael, hey, I want my house back. So that doesn't work.
Well, if you already
actually... So even if you don't say, I am only selling this because I am making aliyah, but if everybody knows you're making aliyah, you're going to make aliyah, and in the midst of your preparations, you're selling your house, so that is included. V'din mechiras hekdeshos ubate kedesios kesad. If you to sell holy property and to sell shuls. Selling shuls, something we know about, right? So shuls, generally, you need to have somewhere else to daven before you sell the shul. If you say, we sell the shul and then let's look for a new place to daven, so that is no good.
Wait, what if everybody, there are no people left, you know, everybody moves out of the neighborhood, and that, you know. They found someplace else to daven, I guess, right?
Somewhere else. Right, they found somewhere else to daven. The shul is completely, the shul completely doesn't function anymore, yeah. And then you should use the money to buy something holier. You should use the money from the sale of the shul to buy a Sefer Torah, something like that. To purchase documents. Shetzarech bohen masira sashtar, uchsiva mitzad acher, shifarish bo, shehu mocher lo oso shtar, v'chol shibuda de ispe. So let's say Harry's in possession of a document that says that Mrs. Birnbaum owes him $3 million. Okay? So if that's the case, and now I want to buy this document, and thereby I want Mrs. Birnbaum to owe me $3 million instead of to owe Harry. So now Harry needs the cash right now, so he's willing to sell this document for $1 million. So I give Harry.
You can still claim the $3 million.
So I give Harry $1 million, and he says, "Great, here's the document." So he hands me the document that states that Mrs. Birnbaum owes him $3 million. So fine. So now I go to Mrs. Birnbaum. I say, "Here, I'm collecting my $3 million." She said, "What do you mean? This document doesn't say I owe you $3 million. It says I owe Harry $3 million." They said, "But yeah, but I bought it from Harry." So I go back to Harry and I say, "Nope." So collect it from her and give it to me, like I said.
Right.
So Harry can say, I didn't sell you Mrs. Birnbaum's debt to me. I was selling you this piece of paper.
Right.
So you paid me $1 million for the piece of paper, and if I still have witnesses that say that Mrs. Birnbaum owed me $3 million, so she still gives me $3 million. So now that's really bad. So this, that's probably a shot. I mean, we'll get the next mitzvah that's a shayla of onah. So if I paid $1 million for one piece of paper, so that sale is probably not valid. But in any event, unless there was an addendum written to the shtar, to the document, saying, Harry Epstein, hereby transfer the debt as well. I'm not just selling the paper. So it needs to be an official written addendum to the shtar, which state this explicitly. Yeah.
What if the sale is illegal? Let's say either according to Lacher or according to secular law. Let's say it's a bribe. let's say it's you know, whatever. Let's say
shochad. What do you mean? Not allowed to give shochad.
You're allowed. Yeah.
Not allowed.
Okay. Okay. So is that valid kenyan? I mean, does it mean that basically he has to undo the kenyan and give it back, or is that the kenyan itself? You know, like theft is a kenyan, right? So
In some situations, yes, a theft is a kenyan. Yes.
Or let's say that as sometimes happens, by the way, and people before Pesach they say, okay, I'm going to sell my stock. You can't sell the stock. It's not a valid sale. You can't sell stock by, any kenyan. You have to do it through...
It's a problem.
The broker.
Yeah, the broker, right.
It's a problem. Yeah, you hit on a problem of selling stocks. I once saw Rav Schechter's shtar mechira that he gave to Rabbi Willig to sell his chametz. So, and he wrote explicitly stocks.
He wants to sell the chametz.
I mean, I don't think he sells real chametz, but he does perform mechira's chametz. Probably because of the stock issue. So that's you're right. It's not so pasha that works at all, because in theory, in secular law, this method of the other methods of acquisition of the chametz, there should be a test case. No, we should have a test case to see if the mechiras chametz would really be upheld in
the
secular
courts. Okay, hey, I want to sell the stock back. I own the stock.
Yeah.
And let's see him go ahead and try to claim.
Well, that would be the least of the issues, because I mean, a lot of people don't sell stocks at all because poskim assume that if you don't have a controlling, some poskim, not Schefter obviously, but some poskim assume that if your share in the company is small, so that you have absolutely no say in what goes on in the company at all, then that's not considered to be an owning, a possession that would be forbidden on Pesach for chametz. Some poskim say it is a problem. So if you really want to be makbid and not to rely on this, so then you would have to be careful not to own shares in companies that trade in chametz. Just to buy stock in General Electric. Don't buy stock in food corporations. ConAgra, I don't know.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay, no, but in terms of the chiras chametz in general, we should have a test case in terms of if the sale is really upheld in... Maybe it's better that we don't find out. Okay. V'din nosin mos l'chaver liknos lo davar k'no la'atzmo b'osan mos ma'yehe b'zeh. So let's say I gave Harry a $10 bill. I said, go buy me a chicken from the store. So he goes to the store. And he gets the chicken, he lifts it up, and he said, I'm acquiring this chicken on behalf of myself, and then pays for it with the money that I gave him. So that, in other words, he still has to, obviously, even if it would work somehow, he'd obviously have to give me the money. He didn't do this, he didn't get that thing for me. But the truth is that it doesn't work. That if I explicitly give money to Harry to purchase this object, then the object becomes mine once he buys it. V'din shlosha shenasnu mos le'echad. If there's only one chicken left at the store, and I say, here's a $10 bill, go buy me the chicken, and then Harry says, and then Harry takes out his own wallet, and he buys the chicken with his own money, so obviously that it would be his. Then it might be not such a nice person, but mice of the chicken would belong to him. Within shlosha shenasnu mos le'echad v'holech b'kana v'miktsas hadomim he'ach yachloku. So three people pooled their money together and gave another person all this money, but then it turned out they didn't need all this money to buy this object. So if he pooled all the money together and gave a fraction of the money and bought the object and then returned to the three people and said, here's your object and here's the money back, so then they've split the object. But if, again, this is your fungible money issue, if they each gave a purse with an amount of money in it, and he said, I actually only need one of these to purchase the object, and he took that purse and he gave that, and he gave it as the payment, so it actually belongs just to the person who gave that particular money. V'din ma she'amru she'barba prokim bashana mos konos le'inyin kone behema. So the Mishnah Maseches Chulin tells us that there are four times a year when money affects an absolute acquisition. As we know, that's the din d'oraisa. It's just the sages who told us that money should not be an absolute acquisition. And what are those times? Ulfikach amru. So four times a year, which are Erev Shmini Atzeres, an Erev Rosh Hashanah, an Erev Pesach, and Erev Shavuos. So those four times a year, you force the butcher to slaughter even if he doesn't want to slaughter. Mm-hmm. Because those are times where everybody needs meat, and if you get stuck without meat, then you're in a really bad situation.
Why should we eat Sukkot rather than Sukkot?
It's a good question. Why not the last days of Pesach also? This is the first days of Pesach. So the first days of Sukkot, people are not as focused on the food because they're so crazy building their sukkah and putting together the lulav and getting, maybe they don't have all the minim yet. They're so busy, they don't have time to worry about the meat as much. But yeah, so Shavuos, that's why you should eat. It says you eat meat on Shavuos, right? It's Chiddush, no? Supposed to eat only milchiks on Shavuos. Okay, we discussed this. Yeah. Fine, so the... So in such a situation, you go to the butcher, you know, you get, it's like this, the fish store where they have tanks of fish, and then you say, I want that fish. And then the fishmonger takes the fish out and, you know, whacks the fish on the head and then gives you the fish. So, or we have in Inwood, there are certain poultry stores where they have live chickens. Yes, you have live chickens, and the customer comes in and says, I want that chicken. And they kill it for you, and they dip it in a hot water bath, which obviously we're not allowed to do for kashrus reasons, even if it would be shechted. And they peel, pluck the feathers, and they give you this really fresh chicken, which actually does taste better. I wish we had more access to really fresh chicken, but okay, that's the way the commercial meat industry is nowadays. Fine. I know because I once went with a friend of mine who was learning Shechita, so he went to one of these poultry places. He wanted to practice Shechita, because they don't care how it's killed. So they didn't end up letting him, actually. I think that might be another place.
They didn't care how it was killed.
The goyim don't care how the chicken's killed. So
they worry about the health code or something like that. You know, they probably
That's why I think one of the stores didn't allow him. I don't remember if he. I don't think we succeeded at all in the end. But whatever. So he wanted to go practice with on the live chickens. So that's how I know that there are in fact stores that sell live chickens in Inwood.
But will they sell you one live if you say don't kill it? I just want to take it home. Use it for whatever.
As a pet?
In New York City?
No,
it's probably you're probably going to have one as a pet in New York City, okay? I think you're not, actually.
Yeah, chicken out of a pet chicken.
Because that is to prevent people from having fighting roosters. That's, right. I think.
There's cockfighting.
There's an actual law.
And there's chicken sacrifices in some religions.
Yeah, I think there is a law that prohibits you from having livestock of any sort inside New York City limits.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Can't have a goat in your backyard.
Oh, chaval.
You can't even have a carp in the bathtub? Oh.
They won't catch you. It's okay. So the... Kido Kimta, the Reb Elab, the Amr Rabbi Yochanan, she perish the Arba Prakim Elu Hamidu Divreim al Dvar Torah. Kido Amr Rabbi Yitzchak, Amr Rabbi Yochanan, Dvar Torah Maos Konos, that we know the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan is that on a Dorais level, Maos Konos. So basically what happens is you go to the butcher, and the butcher in those days had a selection of live animals for you in the backyard of his butchery. So you say, I want that goat. That goat looks particularly delicious. Here you go. I'm taking out a $10 bill. I want $10 worth of meat from this goat. I'm going to buy a whole goat. Who buys a whole? You know, you don't have to be a large family. So you don't have such a large family to buy a whole goat. So the butcher says, good. I'm reserving you a spot. You know, you say, I want the tongue. Kamadas kahuna. Okay, we'll get into issues with that. Fine. I want a certain cut of that goat. It is fine. You're now acquiring this cut of the goat, even though the goat is still alive. When I shecht it in a couple of days for Yontif, so then I will I'll label this cut for you, and then you'll take it home. So in the meantime, the butcher is expecting a lot of people to be clamoring for meat at this time. In the meantime, no one else has paid for this goat. He was expecting it to be sold out. You have this one guy who gave a $10 bill for the whole goat. The only one who bought any part of the goat. So obviously, if you applied the normal rules that there was no act of kinyan over here, so the butcher would say, hey, too bad. You know, I'm not losing a whole goat because you bought, you know, one steak from the goat.
So give him back his $10.
So... Yeah, and ordinarily you give him, and in any other date of the year, so you give him back the $10 and you say, okay, too bad, sorry, you lost out on your meat. But on these four times, when everybody needs meat because of Yontif, so you force the butcher to slaughter this goat, even though only one person has purchased the steak. So now that we have freezers, it's not so bad. So you shech the goat and you put the rest in the freezer.
Why should the butcher take
the
loss of so much of the goat?
That's the din. Sometimes you need to make rules that are best for the community, even though one person suffers from this from these rules.
Plus, it's wasting the food.
Somebody will eat it. You give it away free, then they'll take it.
Eating is not the problem.
Fine. V'din mocher behema v'nimseis trefa. So the butcher wants to buy from the farmer, and he says, I'm buying this to slaughter. So obviously his intention is that the animal should be kosher. So he slaughters the animal, madino, and he finds that there's a that it's a trefa, that there's a defect that renders the animal treif. So he should. So can he say back to the farmer, "Hey, I was buying from you a kosher animal. I need a kosher animal. So how can you? I want my money back. Take the you. Here you go. Here's the carcass. Take it." The farmer can say, "Well, was it a treifa when I owned it, or did it become a treifa after you owned it?" So if it's a type of treifa that you can recognize has existed in the animal for some time, then he indeed gets his money back. But if it's something that could have occurred while it was in the butcher's possession, then he does not get his money back. V'din mocher omer b'mona v'lokeach b'chamishim. So what happens if the seller says, I want to sell this to you for 100, and the purchaser says, no, I only want to buy for 50. V'holach kol echad v'echad, they didn't resolve the issue. Then they each went their merry way. And then they came back and he says, hey, you're still interested in buying my thing? Yeah, I'm still interested. So he took the thing, and then the seller's like, well, okay, can I have my $100, please? And the buyer says, what do you mean? The last thing I told you was that I wanted to buy it for 50, so I assumed you were selling it to me for 50. So how do you resolve this dispute? It depends on who sues first in the bezdin. It's very interesting. You can't sell something that doesn't exist yet. So let's say your trees have not yet produced fruit, and somebody says, hey, I want to buy your dates.
Well, fruit futures.
Says, I want to buy 5 pounds of dates. Well, they're not going to be ready till a little bit later in the year. You know, my trees aren't producing the dates yet. Well, I want to buy them. And he gives them the money. That does not count. You can't sell something that doesn't exist yet. V'din bal hametzer, somebody who is on the border. So what is the din? So there is a din that if you're doing a real estate transaction, so and you want to sell your real estate, so assuming everything else is equal, so you should sell to the person who borders on your property. Mm-hmm. He should have first dibs on getting the property. V'din shlucho shaladam v'shutvo mekro mimkaro, if you have a messenger or a partner in business, b'fseidu v'scharo, how you share the profits and the losses. V'yaseh prati ha-mitzvah rabim, the details of the mitzvah are many. Yizbar v'perek rishon mikidushin, the first perek of Maseches Kiddushin, when it talks, of course, about how a marriage is performed. Ha'isha nikneis b'shalosh drachim, a woman is literally acquired in marriage in three ways, and it goes on discussing ways other things are acquired. Different type of transaction and ownership, obviously, but the linguistically it's similar. Berg Raviyu Shmini Uchiyu Mi Metzia, the fourth and eighth and ninth berg about Metzia, Berg Shlishi Raviyu Vachamishi Vashishi Uchiyu Mi Basra, and the third and fourth and fifth and sixth and seventh chapters of Maseches Baba Basra. Berg Zuchal Makam Vacholzman Bizacharim. This applies only to males. What? Applies only to males? You mean if females conduct transactions, then anything goes? You don't have to apply the rules of the Torah? Obviously, that's not what it means. It means the rules of the transactions apply both to males and females. But since the mitzvah is formulated as being a mitzvah that the Bezdin should enforce the transactions as they are stated in the Torah, as the rules are stated in the Torah of how to conduct acquisitions, then that is talking about males because they're the ones who are forming a Bezdin and not females. Kilhem lasos din. So you neglected the performance of the commandment. If there's a bezdin that did not conduct their proceedings based on these rules of business, unless both agree. She'ilo b'kabola shneiam rashai. If both agree to go by different rules, such as, again, the ones that are common in that time and place, the chol tanai shebemamon kayom. That's something that's a condition between two parties, or more parties, that even if it's a condition that violates what the Torah had in mind ideally, nevertheless, that condition is good and valid, and you could judge accordingly.
Did you go to the shir?